The Living Sea of Waking Dreams, written by Richard Flanagan and read by Essie Davis. Tommy went to a Marist father's boarding school at Burnie. Burnie. Port, paper pulp mill, pigment plant, pedophiles. Came home with a stammer after his 12th birthday. Tommy drank. Ronnie went to Marist too. Maybe Ronnie would have drunk even more. They talked about Ronnie a lot. Certain stories, but not the story, never the story. They talked about his ways, his simple little sayings and tics, his beloved toys and Bup, his dog. But mostly, they talked about Ronnie's future. Anna, Tommy, Ronnie, Terzo, each more or less 2 years apart in that order, and Ronnie, they told each other, the most gifted of them all. Great athlete. Great mind. Maybe yes, maybe no, maybe he lived, Anna said. Maybe he became very fat, maybe he drank, maybe he died of a brain hemorrhage when he was 47. It wouldn't matter when he died, though, because he was the most gifted of the four children, and he would still be dead. 132 kilos of precisely nothing, precisely dead. 47 or 14, did it matter when? That's how Ronnie's brothers and sister talked about him, in a circle that went nowhere, but spiralled only inwards, inventing alternative futures for their brother. They called it Ronnieing. A vortex. A vortex of Ronnieing. Tommy said that he couldn't save him. Tommy always said that as though he could have saved him, but Tommy couldn't even save himself. It was for the best, Tommy would say. And he would start Ronnieing again. Ronnieing and Ronnieing. It was for the best, it was for the worst, whatever. What fucking ever. He would like to be reborn, Tommy confessed, as a tree. Which tells you as much as you really need to know about Tommy. Anna said if he were a tree today, he would be burning, and Tommy says he already is. His son, Anna's nephew Davy, is a schizophrenic and is tormented by voices, which is to say words, says Tommy. Tommy worries, obviously, and maintains the battle to love is the battle to keep words at bay, a battle his son lost. Perhaps that is why, when Francie asked her what had happened to her hand, Anna said nothing. She put in front of their mother the cup of slurry they agreed to use the word tea to describe, thickened to a gel so that she wouldn't drown drinking it. And soon enough, with the first sip, Francie was on to another subject, this time the thing she'd seen in the cave outside her hospital window earlier that day. Animals turning into birds and then into plants, the dray full of the old people that the tiger had talked about at the end. Anna left her mother's side and went over to the window. There was, of course, no cave, no dray, and no metamorphosing animals, only a bleak cityscape. She was possessed by an overwhelming urge to jump through the glass, although it was several stories up and an unforgiving Hobart Street lay far below.